The dream is alive.
GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present the By George Podcast with Brian Lawrence and Chris Jones. The original George Mason basketball podcast.
They're on their feet. Here, Hancock! Oh! Off the top of the backboard, no. Loose, Hancock, front court, Mason. Long base hit point, George Mason.
Coming off a long weekend. Happy Memorial Day. I'm sad it's over. This is Vacationers, the By George Summer Series. I'm, of course, here with my co-host, Chris Jones. Say what's up.
What's up? I'm saluting America.
So, real quick, you know, just give me the quick rundown of your Memorial Day weekend.
Quick rundown. So, let's see. Friday, went out to eat, saw a movie, saw Booksmart, which is the new Superbad film with chicks. Went to a rooftop bar. Saturday, I did some cleaning, mowed the lawn.
Sounds exciting.
Put some insulation underneath the house.
Wow.
Sunday.
Was it getting a little hot in your house? What drove the insulation?
This stems back from an old issue where they had to take insulation out. I was just putting it back.
Got it.
Yeah, not a real fun story. Going out to eat, did some shopping out at Short Pump Mall. So yeah, just, you know, the basics.
Last night, I drank with Pompeo's bodyguard. So okay. I thought that was a little interesting. Glad we didn't get into a political discussion, though. I would not have enjoyed that.
Which way was he swinging? Was he swinging from the left or the right?
He's swinging pretty heavily right.
Okay. Okay.
And then, yeah, of course, just a bunch of barbecues. I'm about tired of sausage at this point. Like, I need some Asian cuisine or something else in my life.
Right. I just grilled up some tilapia last night.
Ooh, yeah. I'll take that.
Unorthodox. But let's get into the episode.
The Vacationers, episode two, we're going to discuss the facilities. We have gotten a sneak peek of the facilities recently. We're going to touch...
But you're just saying facilities. Should we narrow it down? Because every place is a facility, technically. It's Mason Basketball Facilities. We are going to hone in on the new facilities, the updates, all that.
They're not even new. They're just updates to current older structures. Also going to talk a little Lamar Butler, George Mason Hoops discussion that was going on that both Chris and I got involved in. Discuss that. And we're going to get into, of course, some entertainment like we did last time. So we're going to talk Barry, a show we love. We're going to give you two shows that you should currently watch right now. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we're going to give you a little update on the basketball tournament. So first, kick it off, facilities. How did we even get to see pictures of the facilities?
It was like leaked. Like, this is, you know, who was it again? What was his name? Woods. Hunter Woods. Him, his mom, they were flown in to do a visit. It turned out that, you know, we didn't really, you know, choose to go in that direction with Hunter Woods, but his mom took some pictures of him like kicking it in the new locker room and the film room. And yeah, it looks pretty good. Like, it looks clean, it looks nice. Is it like, you know, UNC locker room? Is it, you know, these new locker rooms that you're seeing like in the major Power Five conferences? No, but it looks a hell of a lot better than what it was. And I think we're going to eventually get like an unveiling. Late summer, we should be able to see it.
And By George is actually going to record a podcast there. So they want us
in the locker room.
Wow. Yeah, they want us to come, get in the facilities, interview some players, you know, be there for the unveiling, which, you know, we always appreciate. Thank you, Marky.
Mark.
And, you know, a couple things. I want to talk about the things I liked. And I want to talk about the things I didn't like.
Okay.
Of course, we don't like the logo. That's been well documented. I don't mind it as much as Jones. Jones wants something more simple. But the light in the middle of the locker room, I thought was pretty silly. It's a light Mason logo.
Yeah.
It looks like one gigantic light could give you a suntan. But I just thought that was super cool.
Yeah. And the logo thing, it's not anything like the athletics department can really deal with. You know, it's kind of a bigger issue. The star logo just looks like something from the early 2000s, like kind of a half Orlando Magic kind of looking thing. So,
right.
You know, what are we going to do? We're stuck with it. But either way, but let's also talk about the need of it. Like, why did we need this update? And I think solely for recruiting purposes. I mean, yeah, exactly what we brought Hunter Woods in for is how we're going to be using it. Sitting him down, having them take pictures, you know.
We got pretty good insight into just kind of how they, you know, chauffeur recruits. You know, they showed him around. They, you know, got some shots up, you know, so we wined and dined. And then they put their name on the TV screen in the film room, which I thought was, you know, took some prep.
Minimal, but maybe you dial it in. Let's get real. But
I think you need the locker rooms not only for recruits, but for players, too. I mean, people got to enjoy it. People got to, you know, live in it for 4 years.
Right. You can't walk around a dump and be like, yeah, I really see myself here for the next 4 years. Yeah, you can't just have, like, you know, wheeling out a TV out of the showers or whatever they were doing before for the film breakdown. So,
and I believe before they didn't even have doors on their lockers. So they just had open cubbies. And now they actually have some, you know, an open and or a closed, it actually goes ceiling to floor. The new little lockers. It just looks clean, and that's kind of what we always
much
appreciate.
Needed. But also, one question about this little recruiting thing with even Hunter Woods, and I've noticed a lot of recruits nowadays, they're doing the bit where they try on the uniform, they take a few pictures, they post it on Twitter, they get whatever fan base or school fan base they're sort of they're vying for to really like it, retweet it, and all this. But it's like... When did that become a thing? When did trying on the uniform, taking pictures, like really teasing a fan base, like, hey, can you envision me in this for the next 4 years? And like, I don't know, like
the extra tease is when you do all that and you don't make the offer.
Right.
So now it's just like, excuse me.
Right.
But you know, I think it's had to have been for a while. I mean, it's been as long as we've covering the squad, I would say at least 10 years, they've been throwing the gear on and you have to, I mean, You switch jerseys every 2 to 3 years. I mean, you want to show them off.
I mean, look, if I'm like a really tight, you know, high school basketball player right now, and I have multiple offers on the table, I'm going to go to every single college, try on that uniform, post it, have a ton of kids start following me to try to get me to, you know, go to that particular school. Your Twitter following could increase by like 10,000 kids if you're just going to like 5 schools.
I know.
Just trying on a uniform.
It's a no-brainer. Yeah. I mean, we're going to follow you. Hunter Woods actually unfollowed us.
Ooh,
so.
Really?
Yeah, he doesn't want to see our content anymore. And then, you know, I want to touch on the film room a little bit more. It's almost like a movie theater. My favorite part is the backdrop. They just did it simple, bolded letters, George Mason. I think it looks good. They nailed kind of the forest green. But did you think the TV would be bigger? Like, you have this full theater room. And then like a 55-inch?
If we're going to nitpick, I mean, sure, there's some things where it looked like they, you know, could have spent a little bit more money here and there. But again, it was like funded through donations. And so it took a while just to get this. So can we really nitpick? Not really. I mean, do they still obviously have a few hurdles to go? Like, do they really need to dress up the rack, you know, the practice facility itself, the walls, are they still bare? Do they have something there?
It's like, do we even have like former players at this point? Like, can you throw some fat heads on the wall? can we come in and just like sign some stuff?
Well, at the very least, put the Lamar Butler on the cover of Sports Illustrated somewhere. Because, right. I mean, right. I don't know if we're ever going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated again, but it's a perfect lead-in to our next topic. Lamar Butler came up recently on the Mason Hoops boards, whatever you want to call it.
And that's something that you've been active on for how long now?
I've been like sort of like I've had a ghost account where I just was really like lurking on and on since 2005.
So you've jumped platforms at this point, even.
I was in the CAA zone, and then I followed them here. Yeah, for people who don't know what this is, it's essentially where people discuss Mason hoops, anything Mason related, really, on, you know, your standard message board. So, you know, what you're going to get are some insiders and essentially like losers who are just kind of like hating or
Don't call me a loser.
Okay, fine. But yeah, it's not like the best place in the world. But you know, if you just need some insider information, it's an okay place to go.
It's pretty much where it's
like-minded people for the most part.
And we get a lot of information there, and then we pretend to break it on Twitter. So
yeah, we pretend to break.
So Lamar Butler
was recently called out by a guy.
Yeah, and you know, normally like sometimes I let things fly. We don't post too often. But you know, we've had this conversation about our fan base being a little bit racist,
for
a while, you know, and the reason being is that, like, you know, Hewitt got a short leash and Paulson got a long leash. And so we're like, is there a reason for that? So, you know, it's always just kind of been in the back of our heads. It's not like we're like, you know, singling people out and calling them racist. It's just like inference that we've made.
You're simplifying it a little bit too much. I think that, you know, we've noticed over time that people will use words like cancer, virus, dumpster fire when discussing Paul Hewitt. And I noted this on the boards recently that after 4 years at Mason, he was, what, 66 and 67 as his total record, practically 500. And he's considered a virus, a cancer, a dumpster fire. And Paulson, you know, and this is no indictment on Paulson or any. I'm not in favor of Hewitt. Hewitt was fired for a reason. He wasn't that great of a coach.
But at the time, we both thought he needed to get fired.
Sure.
And he got fired.
DP has a 65 and 67 record, so one fewer win than Hewitt, and he's considered the savior, the guy that brought us back to respectability, whatever. And it's just
don't
kind of
talk about Dave Paulson because he made us respectable again. People respect us.
And I just don't see the difference in opinions. I just don't see why they would be so vastly different. You know, how is one a savior, one's a cancer, when they're practically at the end of the day the same coach?
Jones, it's the culture. Okay.
I get it. The culture,
it's the culture's changed.
Yeah, okay. The culture's changed, but I'm just saying that at the end of the day, it's about wins and losses, and they're practically the same coach in that respect. And Hewitt had to deal with, you know, as many things as DP's had to deal with. You know, DP's had kids leave. He had, you know, lack of facilities. Well, Hewitt had the same lack of facilities, and he made the jump to the A-10 in the midst of his, you know, four-year coaching tenure. So 2 years in, he had to go to a whole new conference with the same like shitty facilities that DP had when he started. I'm just saying, you know, at this point, you either say, you know, DP's a great coach and Hewitt was like, he was fine. Or if you're going to say Hewitt's a cancer, then what can you call DP?
Right. And so you know, there's already some thought of just like why, you know, and this is obviously a deeply rooted issue in just culture in general. But, you know, so we see racists in our spider senses start to tingle and we're like, oh, I wonder what this discussion's about. But no, it's not about, you know, something that we talk about sometimes. It's about Lamar Butler and someone claiming that he's racist. Okay. And, you know, that's fine. You know,
no, it's not.
I just tried to find his tweet about it. He's actually deleted it, and he deleted. He had one tweet that was just eyes and a retweet of Juwan Howard. Then he retweeted out a clarification because everyone started talking about Mason. He's like, guys, I'm not talking about Mason. I'm talking about the Memphis of the world, talking about the Arkansas of the world.
Georgetown, yeah.
You know, so, and then he's like, of course, Mason fans come out of the woodworks and argue with them. So then he deletes that one too. And now he just has a retweet of Juwan Howard. Going back to coach at Michigan, and which is kind of cool because, you know, the Fab Five had, you know, falling out with the Michigan team, and you don't really want that. I mean, it's probably, you know, they got a 30 for 30. It's one of the biggest stories in Michigan basketball history. So you kind of want that culture back. And what Butler said was, you know, kids probably want to play for someone that they can relate to, someone that speaks their language, and someone that has some, you know, NBA basketball experience that can help them get to the next level. Ultimately, recruiting in these Power Fives, you know, these kids want to go play in the NBA. It's not always going to happen, but that's their goal going into college. And so you want a guy like Penny Hardaway who can, you know, show you the ropes and kind of not only get you into the NBA, but introduce you to the culture. You got fresh gear. You're rocking foam posits on your feet.
It's someone that's been there before. They're minor celebrity or major celebrity, depending on how you look at it, to either the student or the student's father, you know, the potential recruit's father, what have you. And it's almost sort of the reason why I wouldn't say Daryl Green was necessarily hired as like a recruiting so-and-so, but it's good to have these types of like athlete names that you could walk into a room and say, well, you know, we do have Penny Hardaway. We do have Daryl Green. We do have Juwan Howard. We do have, you know, Patrick Ewing, you know, a big name that you could sell to either the recruit or the recruit's father to kind of get any little edge you could have, you take. And so I get it. And also like as a kid, you want someone, I don't know.
No,
yeah,
it makes sense. And there now, is there some race involved? Sure. I mean, you know, a lot of
former
sports
are
dominated. Yeah, our American sports are dominated by African Americans at times, and that's fine. And so, you know, it was interesting because, you know, basically there's this narrative now that Lamar Butler only likes like black coaches, and I was just like, I don't know if that's accurate. I mean, I've gone through his Twitter. I mean, he does congratulate black coaches for getting jobs, and I don't think that that's odd, nor should he be labeled a racist. So I responded, and that kind of ensued a full-on debate.
I have no problem with someone, you know, supporting minority coaches. You know, when they're literally in the minority, it's like there sort of needs to be a slight brotherhood, you know, because if you do look at the numbers, the overall numbers, you know, it still doesn't come out sort of to proportion that it should be. I mean, I think there's truth in the fact that kids will respond better and, you know, probably have a better connection to people that, you know, they can really relate to. And, you know,
and I don't necessarily think that that means, you know, that every coach has to be black, but I do think it brings up an interesting conversation because there's always like the conversation of, you know, do I trust this coach if he didn't play in the NBA or if he didn't play at a high level? And that goes all the way down, you know, like I didn't play basketball much. Like I didn't play college basketball, but I coached high school basketball. So I had kids kind of look at me like, well, this guy's not good. I can beat him. You know, and so why am I going to trust him? And so there is some, like, that's kind of what I took Butler to mean by, you know, speak the same language, is like kind of speak the same basketball language on the court. Now, of course, it probably speaks to, you know, their dialects as well. But, you know, I kind of just took it to mean like someone that knows what they're talking about. And, you know, there is always that debate back and forth of, and coaches in the NBA didn't play. There's plenty that didn't play in the NBA, you know?
If that were true, Michael Jordan would be the greatest coach of all time. You know, all the greatest would be the greatest coaches.
And in fact, Larry Bird bombed.
Right. So it doesn't necessarily work out that way. But I think maybe when you're younger, you may tend to gravitate to sort of that type of thinking.
Right.
You know, the success is related to your personal success, you know,
it's kind of like spoiler alert. Lamar Butler played for a white guy.
Yeah.
So it's not as if like he's some like overly racist guy that just wants to play
white
for
or,
black coaches.
White
so.
Or Spanish. El era nigga.
So that was kind of interesting. It's always fun. Like this is off season. You know, these are the
There's
type of things.
There's not a lot to talk about.
Yeah. These are the type of things that happen overanalyzing a Lamar Butler tweet that's now been deleted 3 times.
Yeah. So,
and so it was fun, but you know, it's just kind of interesting that we kind of talk about race, you know, and it's just unfortunately just very common in culture and something to discuss, especially during, this administration. So, you know, it's just interesting that we hop on the boards, there's a racist conversation and it's not about us as a fan base.
And the thing is Lamar Butler's been a fantastic, ambassador to Mason. He's represented the university very well. I don't think he's offended anybody. He's what, at PVI right now? So, you know,
if nothing else, we want to invite more relationships with them. I mean, we do have a PVI player coming in. You know, and maybe there was some saltiness there that we had two coaches leave and a basketball ops guy, and not a single Mason alum is being contacted, at least to the best of our knowledge. I could be completely wrong, but
would you like to see some sort of Rooney Rule implemented at the college level or something.
Me personally, not really. I mean, yeah, I guess it's just something I don't really, I guess I don't care about it. If that sounds rude, I apologize.
Okay, but, you're racist.
But what, what I do wish Mason would do is I do wish they would incorporate some alumni on the staff.
Well, we do have Tony Skin, who's a successful, assistant coach. Where I the last known whereabouts was Louisiana Tech, and they beat us the last time we played them in that tournament last year.
And it'd just be like a basketball ops position is the prime time spot for. I mean, maybe like everyone's playing, or maybe nobody wants to take these jobs, and I'm just kind of speaking out of my ass.
We have successful former players too, like Chris Fleming. He's doing great things. I mean, he's white, but I'm just saying, like in general, we have
no white coaches. Right. Okay, they can't relate. They can't speak the language.
Sure. But I'm just saying, we have like just a ton of great involved alum. And I would just love to get them integrated back into the university. I think there needs to be more of like this culture of pride, you know, with the Mason Athletic Department. Either way, though, one thing I want to touch on in terms of Mason pride real quick before we go break for a commercial. Real quick, Mason Track and Field. They won. And I think Mark LaFrance tweeted it, the field that Mason Track and Field was going against, and it was like UNC, Purdue, Michigan, you know, all these major schools, Maryland, and I was like, okay, well, you know, Power Five conferences, track and field, anytime I watch, you know, the Nationals, you know, where they're racing up in Oregon or whatever, it's always the major schools represented. But we actually went down there and we qualified. We're going to Nationals in Austin. Wow. And it's not uncommon. I know that every year that when I started at Mason back in 2004, we'd been winning track and field, whether it's indoor, outdoor, you know, we're always winning something in the track and field area. So kudos to track and field, and let's keep it going. I feel really proud, and we're like right now running with the big boys. So
yeah,
and we also have like what an Olympic David Vergberg, what's his name?
It definitely, I mean,
he ran in the Olympics, like
he won gold in the 4x4, I believe. And so yeah. it's you know, it's nice to have things like that. I mean, you look at Edwards' tenure. You know, outside of basketball, like the teams have done pretty well.
Here and there. I mean, yeah. We could stand to use a little bit more success.
We compete in the A-10, though.
Yeah, there have been some surprises as well. I think our volleyball team had a very remarkable season, taking down like Penn State at one point. I'd like to see a little bit more out of baseball, but, you know, and soccer, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more out of that. But yeah, everything's moving in a better direction.
Yeah, that's hard to deny. Okay, this is Vacationers by George Summer Series. When we come back, we'll be getting into our entertainment section, talking Barry, highlighting some shows for you. Stay tuned. I can't believe the Raptors won. I had the Bucks, easily winning that series. I'm so excited for them to go up against Golden State Warriors. Someone's got to bring down the dynasty. I think it's Kawhi Leonard. Man, I can't wait to tune in. Jones, are you watching?
No. You can't wait to see Kawhi Leonard take down Golden State?
Yeah.
You know how absurd that statement sounds? This is a clean sweep. You're about to witness... I have no words to describe this NBA Finals. I'm sorry. The East was bad, and then it like pulled its third best team into the finals. Meanwhile, Golden State clearly dominates and heads right into the finals with, you know, ample rest. I'm sure KD, even if KD's back, it's done. So am I excited to see it? No. Am I excited to see Drake give back massages to coaches? No. Am I excited to watch, you know, the Splash Brothers rain threes on, you know, another hopeless team? No. It's done. It's in the books.
And it's not even on TNT. This is a commercial letting you know that the NBA Finals bombs. Welcome back. Excited to talk entertainment. Last week, we discussed Game of Thrones, of course, got into some music, Vampire Weekend, Harmony Hall. I'm still bumping it. It was kind of funny because, you know, the Ryan and Dom cast dropped a show.
The Ryan and Dom cast.
Made me laugh, you know, just kind of their banter was pretty funny this last time. And they also, you know, Ryan does a song of the episode, and he did Sunflower by Vampire Weekend, just completely unrelated. And he also says in the podcast... He says he listened to our podcast in the show and was psyched that, you know, that we also talked about Vampire Weekend. I love kind of the cross flowing of podcasts that we got going on right now.
I love their cast, by the way. If you're listening to us and not listening to them, you should listen to them. It's a fantastic show. It's very funny. I really do enjoy
it. It's by students. You know, how often do you get to kind of insight on, you know, kids taking finals? And it's not as, you know, alcohol aggressive as our show is. It's, you know.
Because legally they cannot drink. So
recording this at 9 in the morning, I got a scotch in hand.
No, you don't.
So, no, it's a mimosa. But, you know, I want to talk about Barry. It's a show that I think maybe you watched an episode before me and you said, yo, you have to watch this. And I go back and forth on it, and but it really did kind of lure me in to be a complete Barry fan by the end of season two. Spoiler alerts, if you are planning on watching Barry and you haven't, maybe skip through this section. We're going to talk a little bit about it.
We don't necessarily have to spoil everything. Let's just do a recap.
There may be a couple little bits.
Okay, well, here's my recap. So you can spoiler alert down, you know, turn the volume back on, even though if they turned it down, then they probably can't hear me telling
you. They already skipped. Yeah, we lost 10 viewers.
Yeah, that was a big botch on your part. Okay. Either way. So I'm sorry. Let's quickly define two others who may not have their HBO subscriptions anymore, because they canceled it after it got. This is Barry. So this is one of the reasons why you might want to keep that HBO login, because it's a dramedy. It's a dramedy in its purest form. You have this like real heart-wrenching drama from time to time about a former assassin who is turning into this like wannabe up and coming actor. And it's like a very interesting foil between the two. Like, why would this assassin want to become like an actor? And what you'll slowly see over time is that he can use some of this old aggression. Like, he was like a cold-blooded killer, and he could turn
still
this
is, P.S.
into like this, you know, intense acting motivation. And so it's, you know, just a great show to show, you know, the funny side of Bill Hader while also seeing like how well he can act. Beautifully written by Alec Berg. You might know him from Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Euro Trip, ton of other shows. And so it's just like a really well done show. And one thing I know that you kind of hated on me about it before, but again, I still think that the action is really good and it's realistic action. Like, yeah, when he goes and like murks people, like I'm like, it looks like he's actually murking people. Like
they
shots.
Have a lot of hand to hand combat in this second season, which I thought was shot really well. And speaking of Alec Berg, he's involved in every single episode.
And Mr. Berg.
And what's also cool is Bill Hader, I believe, is the second writer-producer of the show. So it's really heavily Alec Berg influenced. Bill Hader influenced, which is cool because, you know, you
he's
obviously grew up watching him.
Yeah. No, I love Bill Hader on SNL and everything that he's done since. You know, the movie he did with Amy Schumer to... you know, being in Hot Rod, which is like sort of like a, just sort of like this cult classic, but he's fantastic. He's really funny. And I just think that it really, everybody should be watching it because the cliffhangers that they leave you with, like, honestly, there were multiple points during the season where I was just at the edge of my seat. Like literally, you know, sometimes people say it, but I was literally at the edge of my seat. Like,
and we're
whoa.
At a point now where it's like, we got to wait a full another year to see what happens. And that's what's kind of tilts me. Like, you guys are lucky if you're listeners and you haven't watched it because you just get to go binge it.
Pummel it. Yeah.
It's tough when you got to wait a full year off a cliffhanger like we were left with in season two. But I want to speak to, you know, Sally. She is the main... female in the show.
Main female.
Sarah Goldberg would be her
lead
name.
Lead actress.
And you kind of
female.
And you kind of get sized for her.
Yeah. No, she sizes me.
Why?
Well, her acting chops are great. She's kind of hot, and you know, it's it's kind of fun.
I thought it was kind of interesting, like, you know, people actually like wanting to lock her in for different roles, and she like couldn't embrace the roles, just turning down millions of dollars. I thought that kind of whole side plot was interesting. You get this kind of look into LA acting, even though it's not necessarily about that. The subplots end up being kind of interesting, but obviously my favorite character, what?
Oh, no, I was going to say, it actually is very realistic in terms of, you know, L.A. acting scene, specifically for women, too, sort of that, like, casting couch type of,
right.
You know, there was that season one where, the, you know, that one producer was like, so... he's like, you know, if you want this part, you know, I'm just going to have sex with you in this office right now. And he was like waiting to see her reaction. And she was like, really? And then, you know, he was waiting to see it. And then he was like, nah, I'm just kidding. But, you know, she said yes, he would have just done it. Like, I bet you that
she would have hopped right on his lap.
Right.
And he would have taken
it
to
town. But I bet you that
happened.
That has to happen all the time where they put out the feeler and then they like reel it back in if like they don't necessarily take to it.
Well, when you look like Harvey Weinstein, I'm guessing you don't have people lining up to sleep with you.
Well, when you have his pockets,
right.
I mean, those are deep.
So my favorite, you know, Henry Winkler's obviously in it.
Hey, the Fonz.
Right. Very famous for being the Fonz or in Waterboy. But my favorite character is I don't even know how to describe him. His name is NoHo Hank. He's just so funny. I think he's like a mob boss of some kind. But he's your comic relief of the show. Anytime he's pictured, he's super ditzy. And he just kind of...
He's very fun. Like, he just kind of keeps it light. You know, he just kind of like, yeah. So, yeah, I think everybody loves him. He's probably, like, the best comic relief on the show.
Yeah.
And overall, I think we're both going to give it a thumbs up, right?
Yep. Thumbs up. Must watch. Go watch it.
Back to the spoiler bit, though. We were talking about how, you know, turn the volume down to spoil it. Just one quick little thing. I'm over tiptoeing or walking on eggshells regarding the no spoil bit. For people that haven't seen Game of Thrones yet, like, they're still doing it on TV. Like, I was just, the Today Show was on downstairs and like, spoiler, you know, we're not going to discuss Game of Thrones ending. It's like, how long do the people that actually, like the fans, the people that showed up the night of it, you know, the airing, how long do we have to walk around in silence,
right,
and in fear of ruining it for these fringe fans that like, oh, I'll get to it next week. It's like, no, can we talk about it now? Like, I get it. We're all busy, but can you not squeeze out an hour?
And this has kind of been the spring of it, because you had Game of Thrones and you also had Endgame. And, you know, people are so excited to spoil Endgame the Friday night when they see it.
Yeah, no, I get that.
So there is, like, an issue with it.
Give people time, but a week is about as long as I'm going to give it.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I would agree. So that's going to move us on to, we're just going to suggest two shows that we're watching right now for you real quick. Jones, why don't you kick it off?
All right. Well, so one show that I'm watching on Netflix is a show called Easy. And so what it is, it's kind of like these, I hate to describe it. I feel like I want to say it's like High Maintenance, but probably no one watches High Maintenance. But what you essentially get are these like small individual storylines that they kind of run through every season. And you're essentially following these couples or people that are seeking relationships. It's all about relationships, sex, love in general. How do you
make me randy?
How do you describe it? But you're essentially getting these one-off story episodes. It's sort of like an anthology series where they're kind of individual episodes, but they sort of do kind of tie in together. Even like they cross streams within the universe of the show. But it comes down to these like individual storylines about love and relationships and things like that. And it's really real. It's really raw. It's very relatable.
And now that we're 32
well acted,
the
writing is fantastic. Yeah.
It kind of fits the narrative. I've watched it. I can also agree with Jonesy. Also, he mentioned a show called High Maintenance. Much watch. Start with the webisodes online first. But my show, I'm picking up. I'm always trying to be, trendy, ahead of the curve. So I watched Dead to Me, Christina Applegate.
Really ahead of the curve? When you sign on to Netflix, it's the first screen that comes on.
Excuse me, Jonesy.
You know how many times I've accidentally hit that button where it starts playing episode one and I have to start hitting the guide button to go back?
I actually don't think you should watch the show. I don't think Dead to Me is for Chris Jones. But for all of our female listeners or any kind of like girly men like myself, it's a good watch. It kind of has like a Big Little Lies feel to it.
I like Big Little Lies.
The Affair, just kind of like, you know, you're going to see the dilemma and you're going to be like, that's kind of cliche. But it's also kind of cool as well. It's about a girl who loses her... it's about a woman who loses her husband to a car accident, and then just about kind of her having to cope with that with two children and a bitch ass mother-in-law. And so it's just,
sounds,
I don't
fun. Want
it does also have that kind of undertone humor as Barry does. You know, it's kind of like, should I be laughing at this? Not really, but it's still kind of funny.
So needless to say, in summary, we both like these shows about sort of, they're kind of cheeky shows. If Barry's sort of this macho masculine show, then the two shows that we're recommending are easily very feminine sort of.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you know, your dry humor. Should we be laughing at Barry shooting someone in the head? Probably not. But you know, sometimes it's funny. Yeah. So that's our two shows. We're going to continue on with our entertainment section. Just kind of talking about, you know, the influence. It was Memorial Day weekend, kicking off summer, and the influences of a summer single.
The song of the summer, right?
Song of the summer. We don't have one yet, so yeah, we're waiting for it.
It's still May, but it's around this time that record companies, you know, they all start dropping what they think will be the next song of the summer. And the problem with the song of the summer nowadays, it's like it's being marketed as such, and so you'll see BuzzFeed articles, this is the song of the summer, or you'll see, things being labeled the song of the summer. And I felt like it used to happen organically. Like it used to be real. Like even just like a few years ago, I thought Blurred Lines and, the Daft Punk song Lucky, those like naturally became the songs of the summer. And it wasn't being told, like we weren't told to actually like these songs. And so like last year you had like Justin Timberlake come out with this Can't Stop the Feeling song. And it was just instantly branded. This is going to be the song of the summer. And I just kind of like, it turns me off. Like I just hate when I'm being told what I should be liking and it feels forced. One song that I was thinking about the other day that could have been the song of the summer, but it just came like a month or two too early would be like the Old Town Road, like Lil Nas X. Like that could have just, it just kind of came out of nowhere. It felt like it became popular authentically like through Twitter and everything. And it could have been the song of the summer, but it's more like the song of the spring.
I believe it's been, I don't know, it's been like a top song for a while now.
Yeah.
Like it's nuts. I found a little list here. 2018, This Is America, Cardi B, I Like It, Drake, Nice for What, Zed, BTS, Calvin Harris. So a lot of options. So I don't know, like last year, was Justin Timberlake's, was that a lock?
It was at least attempted to be the song of the summer, but
what you're saying in your complaint is that at this point, you know, we don't get to choose as the masses the song of summer. No, it's just told to us. And last year kind of may have been the tipping point that we may not have followed that advice.
Yeah. No, I just kind of like when something kind of blindsides you, like back in 2012 when Call Me Maybe kind of came out and you're like, who the fuck is Carly Rae Jepsen? And then like it was just this infectious single that took over and it just became like the song of the summer. Yeah. Or, you know, even what's her face? Katy Perry. You know, that she had a few big songs in the summer. I don't know.
It's kind of, I'm looking back at the list now. And Despacito was pretty fire.
It was.
Like, I'm about to go listen to Despacito after this.
I'm not, because I'm sick of it. I heard it like 40 billion times last year, but it was like a real, you know,
Which leads me to this, and it's I think this was almost done on purpose. The Justin Bieber Ed Sheeran song. They dropped it, you know, a week before Memorial Day. They clearly wanted that to be the summer hit. Did it do it for you?
No. And what these songs try to like overly do is they'll have like a really overly catchy chorus, and they want it like everyone to be singing it with their car windows down and by the pool, and it's like,
and I'm still listening to Old Town Road instead.
Well, but you could just feel people like trying like way too hard. It's like, whatever.
You don't need Justin Bieber. You do plenty on your own, and it was overproduced. He doesn't need that either. He plays instruments himself. Like, he doesn't need this overproduced Justin Bieber hit at this point. Maybe he did need to resurrect his career a little bit.
He went on Game of Thrones.
He's been in the hiding. But you know, if you are listening and you have a song of the summer already, go ahead and tweet us out. You can follow us on all platforms at ByGeorgeGMU. That's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Give us your prediction of what you think the song of the summer will be or should be or
won't be.
Let us know if you don't care.
Yeah. Which takes us into our last little update bit. Last week we talked about the basketball tournament. And now we want to kind of just like give you a little update. What do you have for us? Breaking news from Chris Jones.
The Green Machine is now eligible for the TBT tournament.
Which is amazing news. You have got to be excited for it. Last week we talked about how, you know, you and I may be more excited for that than the upcoming Mason basketball season. And for you specifically, you're down in Richmond. They're going to play games in Richmond.
Yeah, they're going to be in the RVA Regional, Richmond Regional. And the following are now at 209, so we're slowly creeping up, you know, in the 200s, and I think, did we contribute to that a little bit?
I think so. And we're going to bring you content throughout. Ronnie's already said he's going to go shoot some photos. When they come into town too to practice, we're going to be at their practices. So do keep in touch with By George for all of your TBT news. I'm pretty excited about that. Gotta say
all
that.
All of your TBT news.
we're not covering any other team. Right. But, you know, you actually do randomly watch it and do keep up with it more so than most people I know. So you have got to be rather, you know. But do I?
I can't even really explain the last, like, 2-minute bit.
We're gonna have the rules for you next week for the ending and how it's different, because this is now the second podcast in a row that we don't know. But I'm excited just to kind of, you know, my favorite player is Mike Moe. You know, it's just that nostalgia when you're 30 and you're married and you got a kid. Sometimes you need just to get brought back to the good old days,
right? Seeing like Will Thomas like do like a classic little hook shot or something like that. Right. That's just gonna take me all the way back to 2006.
They're all gonna have better jumpers. You know, it's gonna be a different game, and I'm super excited for it.
Quick question about the TBT tournament, and I know we only wanted to touch on it, but real quick, like, someone is going to emerge as like the leading scorer game in, game out. Like, who do you think, you know, leads the team in score? Like, who's going to take all the shots? Like, who's going to be that guy on this TBT team?
I think it's got to be Brian Allen.
Me too. I kind of think he's.
So if you want me to say a second one then, because you're going to say Brian Allen, I can say Fowler and Campbell, almost like a similar player. You know they're going to get their shots.
So anytime, they're going to go guard heavy?
Yeah, I think anytime you see Fowler and Campbell play at like Kenner or anything, he's the guy that's just like chucking up threes. Like if you leave him open for a second, he's letting it fly. And there's not many people I'd rather have in the TBT than Follower and letting it fly. So I'm going to say Campbell, giving you the alley-oop of Brian Allen.
Okay. Yeah. I don't disagree. And I don't know. Maybe we utilize our big men more. You know, it'll be interesting to see, like, Pearson. Like, will we go down low and feed it?
But why do you think Brian Allen's going to be the guy?
Well, Brian Allen is, like, the youngest, or one of the younger, at least. You know, he sniffed the NBA, at least. And just the way his style, you know, back at Mason, I felt like he could at times take over games. But who knows? Maybe it's Sherrod Wright. Maybe it's anybody else on the team. Everyone was, at the very least, like somewhat of a scorer or an elite scorer at their tenure at Mason. So it'll be interesting to like see who is that guy late in games, but I do have a feeling that it's going to be Brian Allen or even possibly Fowler and Campbell. They just kind of both had those the game where they had that confidence in taking the last shot. So,
yep, have to agree there, listeners. If you're sitting there and you're just thinking while you're listening at work and you're just thinking like, damn, I miss Memorial Day weekend. I miss the hot dogs. I miss the pretzel bites. I miss the natter days. You know, I miss the weekend, and it's only Tuesday, and you're just dreading it for the next 4 days. Just know that we're with you. We're here with you, and we're bringing you content to hopefully make your 45 minutes of your work week a little bit more bearable. This is Brian Lawrence.
That was a strange finale. If you're sitting at work and thinking about pretzel bites, we're with you.
You didn't have a pretzel bite this weekend?
No, I didn't. I did not have a pretzel bite.
Wow. I had at least 15. I'm just lying. I actually didn't have a single pretzel bite. Top juice talking. I want to get a move underway. Putting my thought in, I wanna give all my worries away. Cause it's still in my pocket. I wanna empty my calendar days. Let the feeling just spark it. Starting to change, being less guarded. And act like I've got it. I'm putting my heart in.
Making plans. Wildlife is human nature. We've got to take our chance.